Hey everyone, welcome to the Deep Dive. Welcome to Inside Texas Football, powered by InsideTexas.com. Y'all need to head over to Inside Texas for the best Longhorn discussion that there is on the planet. Ian, before we get into our excellent topics, which are a bunch of really good questions from our wonderful subscriber base, to become a part of our subscriber base, you need to subscribe. You need to like this video and make sure you comment in the commentary section. We love to hear what you guys have to say. This is an interplay. This is a conversation. It's not just us talking to you. Who are we? We're no one special. We want to hear from you guys as well. Ian, you are special, and you're going to demonstrate that with your poignant analysis in just a few moments. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing good. I'm at a place that we call Club Wallace, which is my wife's parents' home in Houston.
And they have is that because they have an open bar and they give out ecstasy at the front door?
No. They do have a pool and all my kids are swimming in it right now. So
that's even better.
I'm free.
Nice.
Parental responsibility.
Ian's going to do some fun dad stuff. He's going to watch some History Channel. He's going to read a book and he's going to like watch a 2013 Texas football rebroadcast. Sounds good.
I'm doing this and then I'm going to go jump in.
Nice. All right. Well, before you jump in that pool, let's have our deep dive. Yeah. Ian, we're going to talk about the top reason Texas will win the national championship. So I am curious, Mr. Boyd, the floor is yours. Why is Texas going to win the national title? What's the number one reason?
Man, I think it's got to be that the skill talent allows Arch Manning to live up to or potentially exceed the hype that's building around him. I think it's got to be I'm trying to think of another player that had a lot of hype and totally delivered as a quarterback. Sort of a Tim Tebow kind of deal where it's like, yes, he's great. And also it's working within the broader offensive concept. I think me and you have maybe less questions about Arch and more about if the guys around him are going to allow him to show off all the things he's flashed, right?
Yeah, I think that's actually more my framing. It's Arch Manning may allow the Texas skill players to play at a higher level or play at their full maximal potential.
Yeah.
I believe that there are aspects of this offense. We're entering year five with Steve Sarkisian, and I'm quite confident that there are aspects of this offense that we have still not yet tapped that Sark wants to get into, that we will get into this year, that I think will feel new and perhaps even revelatory. And if you're going to win the national championship, it'll have to feel revelatory in that regard.
I can already tell you there's some RPO stuff. There's maybe a couple more Ezekiel Wheel multi-layered RPO kind of concepts that Sark hasn't been able to get to yet, that he will get to now that he has Arch at the helm.
Yeah, and I think an element too, I think we're going to use his legs judiciously.
Yeah.
But we're going to use them.
Yep.
And there's some interesting elements to RPO or play action where one of the reads is Arch takes it around the edge. He just takes it around the corner because everyone dropped back into coverage. And it was, third and four, and you got an 18-yard gain and a new set of downs. And the defense is just like, everyone's in conflict. And everything they decide to do is wrong. And that's a fun place to be in as an offense.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that.
I can tell. Big sigh, big yawn. Yeah, I can't wait.
Help me from allergies, Paul.
Oh, okay.
I'm not bored. I'm just a mouth breather. You can't breathe through his nose.
It's all right. I understand. As someone who's broken my nose a couple of times, I've had many, many years of mouth breathing.
I think that might come back up later in our show.
That's right. I think we believe Arch Manning might be the key, and certainly how he might elevate or change aspects of this Texas offense. No guarantee that will happen, nor any guarantee that we'll win the national championship. The schedule's pretty daunting.
Yeah.
And no guarantee that a 9-3 Texas, in the regular season, who, say you have three close losses by a total of 10 points to really good teams, there's no guarantee at all that team would make the playoff.
Here's a question though. Are we still going to have the same format where, let's say, Texas misses the SEC championship game? They're like 9-3. They slip into the back door of the playoffs as like an 11 seed or 10 seed. But does that just mean you get the Ohio State draw potentially?
Well, so there's going to be a reseeding this year.
Okay.
So there will be a reseeding, and that will be done on sort of a power ranking. So a 9-3 Texas might be the 8 seed, right? Or the 7 seed. Who knows?
Because last year they tried to do it with deference to the championship games.
Right.
Which was a total disaster, in my opinion.
Yeah, and also, with all respect to the ACC and the Big 12, the loser of that championship game is not the same as the loser of the SEC title game, right? Or the Big Ten title game. So that'll be interesting. All right, what's the top reason Texas will not achieve its goal? And we can't say Arch Manning disappoints.
Yeah, all right. I'm going to just take this opportunity to talk defense and say the secondary and the coverage are not national championship level. I'm not saying they're not. I'm saying if they don't win, that's likely to have been a reason why.
Are there any particular aspects that you're concerned about? Is it the departure of Makuba and Barron?
Yeah, just the overall coverage ability. I think also you had that very haunting stat that you found and that you posted on Inside Texas the other day, that Jalen Gilbo and Malik Muhammad have combined for one total turnover in their Longhorn careers. That's not
61 game appearances, and they've had one turnover, one interception in 2023 by Manny Muhammad, zero forced fumbles, which is to me equally troubling. Because to me, interceptions can be a little, you're not always guaranteed an interception just because you're a good defender, right?
But I think, unless I'm mistaken, neither of them have just a ton of passes defended either.
Manny Muhammad is pretty good at PBUs.
Is he? Okay.
Yeah. He had 8 last year. You could tell I'm writing in the middle of writing my book because I know I like every stat of every player right now. But he has not converted that to turnovers. We would like to see that.
Yeah. They have to make plays, obviously. So let's see here. Gilbo had 3 passes defended last year. Muhammad had 8.
Yep.
8 is totally respectable. 3 is doesn't necessarily mean anything at nickel, but when it's also paired with a lack of impact in fumbles or interceptions or anything else, it starts to worry you.
That's the thing, is a lot of teams, when you notice they have a really good nickel, they sort of fill up the box score. You know, nickel's not a good place to get 9 picks. That's not really going to happen. But you'll notice that they'll have 2.5 sacks, 5 passes defended, 2 interceptions, 2 forced fumbles, you know, 9 stops, you know, 6. Remember Jahde Barron as a nickel? He had like 11 tackles for loss one year, right? Just blowing up screens.
Yeah.
We've not seen that from Gilbo. And I think ultimately probably why he won't be our nickel. Hint, hint. So top reason Texas will not achieve its goals, in my opinion, I think you're onto something with the defense. So rather than just say me too, I'll say Texas offensive line. Mm-hmm. Takes a little bit of a step back. I think people may not fully appreciate how good we've had it the last 2 years. And I think I tried to point it out politically and delicately at Inside Texas in my post-game write-ups, and then eventually not so delicately, that not all sacks are the fault of the offensive line, Ian.
The thing is, it's so they weren't very – they could not dominate great defensive lines.
No.
So you're like, is this really that good of a college offensive line? Because they don't run the ball over everybody. But what you're getting at is that their pass protection was so dang consistent.
Yeah.
And that was really – I think that's Blood and Sark's priority. They always pay lip service to physicality in the run game. But number one is always, we got to be able to protect and land shots over the top. That's what we do here.
If you've ever heard the expression, personnel are policy.
Yes.
That is demonstrated by Sark's selections on the offensive line. When you start Hayden Connor at guard, you're saying I put a premium on pass protection.
Yes.
Over moving people in the run game. And it's perfectly defensible. I would say that we're going to take a little bit of a step back, I think, in that regard. I still think we could have a good offensive line, but I think we're going to face a little more daunting defenses from more teams than people might think at first blush. Florida has better defensive guys in the trenches than I think most people realize. Because we blew them out in Austin, I think people have a very delusional idea of what Florida is going to be this year.
We didn't play Florida last year.
We did. No. Well, I mean, we did, but we didn't. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
And then I think Ohio State, they're going to have some guys, even if we're talking about how they had some losses for sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
OU's going to have guys on their D-line.
Oof. Yes.
So, and A&M, people are like, oh, they lost their three draft picks. They're going to suck. Hey, those three draft picks weren't that great on college on the field.
Yeah.
And the guys they replace them with are pretty good. I just did sort of a deep dive on A&M and their defensive personnel. They're fine.
Did you watch Hicks in their spring game by chance?
Yeah.
He was facing like second and third teamers.
He's good.
Every single play, though, it's like out of the way, coming through.
Yeah, and even some of their guys like Regis, who was sort of a rotation player for him last year, he's a good player. Like if I'm an NFL team, I'm taking him in the late rounds. So
and Jones, the freshman edge.
Yeah. A&M's got some guys, man. And yeah. And look, whatever you think of A&M, and I understand, like, oh, 8-win A&M, all that. And that may be true. In fact, my preview may pick them to have 8 wins. But
yeah.
Elko's a real football coach, guys. Like, he is. And he knows defense. So
you know we're trying to make multiple points, entertain and inform our audience. I think our best answer we keep getting to, but we haven't given explicitly, the top reason Texas will not achieve its goals is that the schedule is probably going to be pretty difficult this year.
Yeah.
To get to the national championship game, to have few enough losses to avoid a tough placement in the tournament, now that they're reseeding, it's going to be hard.
I'm a huge believer in who you play determines your record just as much as how you play. And I think I might be in the minority in that effect because most people have sort of lost column bias of like, well, they beat Wake Forest. And it's like, yeah, well, they played Wake Forest. You know, that's kind of the takeaway. For me, it's like, what's the path look like? What are the matchups? There ain't going to be any team in college football so dominant that they can just roll through. It's going to be about who they play, when they play them, how they play, etc. So those are my thoughts. I know a guy who's dominant in any context, Ian. His name's Gabe Winslow. Mm-hmm. Best damn mortgage guy in the great state of Texas, which means he's the greatest mortgage guy in America. And in fact, if you believe America is the greatest country, as we believe, he's the greatest mortgage guy in the world. And if you are pro planet Earth, as we are, therefore he's the greatest mortgage guy in the galaxy. I'm not going to go known universe because we don't know the universe. This is the guy you need to call. 832-557-1095. He is galactically excellent and he's really good at what he does. Over 20 years in the industry, law degree, went to UT, of course, where he's a national merit scholar. What an achiever. Well, he takes that same energy and effort that he put towards dominating school towards dominating the mortgage market. And that's exactly what he does. This guy, every time I talk to him, he's coming back from some award trip that he won from some various award or being ranked in the top 5 in Texas and all sorts of stuff. He's just like, when you do this kind of stuff, go with the best. Don't get cute with this. Biggest financial decision you'll make in your life for 99% of us is buying our house. Go with the best. 832-557-1095. All right, Ian. We have some questions from our esteemed readers and watchers and listeners. You ready to tackle them?
Yeah.
All right. I want to give an answer to this question, but it may be a little too cute. So I'll give you first crack at this.
Okay.
Well, let's just be cute together. Okay. If you could build a conference.
You always do.
If you could build a conference, what programs would you have? 16 total. What criteria would you use?
I like the SEC in maintaining regional differences in college football. COVID was recent enough where, to me, pulling in a bunch of teams from Big Ten country or the West Coast does not necessarily excite me. I like how the South was uniform in being like, we're going to play football. If y'all want to play football too, that's great. We don't even necessarily care. We're going to play football. We're going to crown a national champion. And, you know, whatever. That was awesome. And how often is something like that going to come along? I don't know. Maybe more often than you think, because the sport is facing a lot of different changes. It's going to be governed differently in the coming years. And so that kind of like cultural affiliation, actually, I think is important. Beyond like, I'm sure the person who's asking this is thinking like places that are fun to play against, take football seriously, nice locations to go home and away with. If you were going to narrow down college football to like a single premier league, who would be in it? That's probably what he's mostly asking.
Yeah, and there's a marketing sense of it, of you want people watching, you want television sets, you want big deals.
Money.
There's that element too, which obviously the Big Ten and the SEC are sort of next level compared to anywhere else. Here's the other thought. Because of lost column bias, because we are not truly professionalized yet in our mentality, if you stock this with 16 all-star teams, the winner of your league is going 8-4 or 9-3. So you kind of do need the Mississippi States and the Kentuckys.
Unless you're building a 16-team super league.
And then you have a whole different structure for awarding a champion. But I'm assuming within our current structure is the question. So the idea of stacking your league with Ohio State, Michigan, Texas, Georgia, Florida, I mean, that's all super appealing. Clemson, but you're just going to all trade wins and losses every week. It's basically going to be like playing in the NFC East back in the 1990s. You know, like we're like whoever won the NFC East was going to win the Super Bowl. And so you could be like the third best team in the NFC East and not make the playoffs. And you would like dominate, you know, the one of the best teams in the AFC. Right. So I think you have to be careful with that. Now, would I pick Mississippi State and Vanderbilt necessarily as my bottom teams? Diego Pavia fun aside, which I think we would say is a rare occurrence. You probably would trade them out just for a big state university with a bunch of TV sets, right?
Is it Mississippi State or Arkansas?
Yeah, well, that's tough. Old Arkansas is figuring out where they are in the college football hierarchy right now, and they're not very happy with it. And
we have our own connection with them because of the rivalry and historic games.
Yeah.
I don't know if they have much of a case against Mississippi State.
Well, I mean, they are the State University of Arkansas. And I would argue that Mississippi State is probably the second University of Mississippi. Maybe a bunch of Bulldog fans are going to type nasty things in response to that. But, you know, look, honestly, Arkansas, probably not the school you would pick. You know, one of the advantages of the Big Ten is that their lesser schools are the main university of a big state with people. And they have a bunch of living alums, right? So even Illinois or Wisconsin, like that's a big state university. Like that's a big deal and in a state with a lot of people. So, you know, that is kind of the thing.
Illinois also is in the forgotten part of Illinois. The part of Illinois that's like indistinguishable from Indiana or Missouri.
Yeah, true. I've driven through there. It's a lot of corn and a lot of bugs on your windshield.
Yeah, you're like, you could be in Oklahoma, you know?
Yeah, I saw Champaign, Illinois in the 90s, and I'll just say that I was not impressed. So not an adorable college town. Our esteemed producer says Texas, OSU, Michigan, Alabama, Georgia, USC. Yeah, I mean, you could make that kind of super conference, and every week it's freaking epic. But, you know, the winner of your league's 8-4, right? And so how does that fit to the current structures? Yeah, I mean, I think Ian makes a good point. not to broaden it to political stuff, but I know at the end of the day, the SEC is going to play football. And, you know, some of these other leagues, they have some pretensions that ultimately led to their demise, like the Pac.
Yep.
Although it's back, Ian, they're vying to be the P5. We'll have to talk about that in a deep dive. All right. What's our next question?
We had the one that was like, yeah, perhaps a better question. If you could drop the SEC programs and replace them, who would you drop and why, and with whom would you replace them?
So we kind of touched upon that.
Vanderbilt.
If you just want to be purely mercenary, you could say, hey, Vanderbilt is not contributing television sets.
Nope.
Vanderbilt's not contributing. You know, they're contributing in most years. Again, you'll find no greater worshiper of Diego Pavia. The gentleman has like maybe paid for my son's future college, but he was at New Mexico State. So believe me, I'm a big fan of Diego Pavia on many levels. But that said, there's a reason it was so exciting last year of Vanderbilt going 6-6, because they don't go 6-6 in the SEC. So you, from a purely mercenary standpoint, you want to drop them and then try to replace them with a school that you could still maybe get a W on, but you still get some TV sets, right?
That's a tough. So I know at least one that fits that bill.
Bring it.
North Carolina.
There you go.
The obvious ones would be to add Clemson and Florida State. But those are...
They're good. Potentially. They're good,
right. So then you're starting to hit the diminishing returns of... How good do you really want this league to be within the current format?
Yeah. You know, honestly, Purdue, for example, is probably better than Vanderbilt, because Purdue does actually have quite a few living alumni and they're pretty passionate and they have great basketball, which is helpful. But as their football team goes 2-10, Purdue grads still tune in and watch. So I would have said Indiana pre-Signetti. But Signetti's turning these guys into a freaking cornfield juggernaut. So
I know a pair of Vanderbilt alumni, and they last year was probably the first year they are college football fans.
Right, but they're watching other teams.
They're Vanderbilt alumni, and last year was probably one of the only years where they could name their team starting quarterback.
Isn't
wherever they grew up, whatever team they're used to rooting for. Like, one was an Oklahoma fan, one was like a Baylor fan or something.
Isn't the Outkick the Coverage guy like a Vandy grad and he pulls for Tennessee?
Probably. I don't know.
Yeah. That is not uncommon. And that's something as a Texas guy you can't relate to. I've never met a Texas Longhorn who's like, well, I went to Texas, but my real team is LSU. It's like, that's not a thing.
No, Texas is the one. I know a bunch of people that grew up Baylor fans before Bryles. And as long as I knew them, they were Longhorn fans.
Yes.
Then Bryles made Baylor relevant and they were Baylor fans. And then they started Baylor fell off and they started dipping their toes back in Sark team's fun to watch.
That's exactly right. So if you just look at this from pure demography, I've kind of broken this down before. Grabbing Arizona schools, specifically Arizona State, very useful. North Carolina, Ian nailed that. Very useful.
You want to look? If there's a school in Virginia, that'd be the one.
Yeah, not really. Like, you got the Cavaliers. And I can tell you, the Arizona State people, they ain't worried about no COVID. COVID's just an opportunity to, like, have a pool party. So
is Virginia a good trade out for – There's two ways we could go with this. We could trade out Vanderbilt for Virginia.
Yep.
And have a academic institution that's going to lose all the time.
You keep your academics, but you get more alums and television sets.
And
the state of Virginia.
And the state of Virginia, which is loaded with talent. Or you could go like, hey, James Madison, guess what?
It's time.
Welcome to the show.
Tell you what I know of James Madison, they take football pretty seriously. One of the
Tech. I mean,
yeah, Virginia Tech, not so great. You're running into the similar dynamics that we kind of talked about before.
They're like Arkansas now, basically.
Yeah. I mean, you almost at that point, if you just want the academic school with some people in a place that's growing, just go take Georgia Tech, right?
Or double dip in North Carolina.
Yeah. Just hey, NC State. Hey, North Carolina. We've come in to save you from the ACC. Or welcome. Duke. Yeah.
Vanderbilt.
Tell you what, if you know anything about Duke's NIL in football, football, not basketball. Y'all know about Cooper Flagg and all that. I'm talking about their football NIL. Quite good. Top 20. Surprising, but true. All right. Next question. Who are your dark horses to win each P4 conference? Ian, this is a classic contrary Ian question where the Ian Boyd that I used to know and love would argue powerfully for Mississippi State to win it all this year because of their system or something. But you become older and wiser and buffeted by events. So now you're just going to say LSU or something awful. So what's it going to be?
For the SEC, I'm going to take, man, it's probably Florida that we just got. Do they count?
Well, so dark horse, there's people right now who are like, Alabama, they're not a dark horse. I'm going to give you the odds from FanDuel so we can make – we have a dispassionate intermediary here that can tell us Texas, Georgia, Alabama, LSU – Ole Miss and A&M are the top six favored by the odds. Obviously, that falls off. I mean, that those odds jacked up very quickly when you got to Ole Miss and A&M, right?
Yeah. What are Florida's odds to win the SEC?
And do you have 2,100?
Do you have a ticket for that?
I do, and my ticket is better than plus 2,100.
Oh my gosh!
But I also think I put like $3 on it, so I can't brag too much if I win. So here's the deal with Florida.
They could win the league.
Sorry?
They could win the league.
They could win the league, and here's why. And people are like, the schedule, you idiot. That's why they could win the league in a weird way. If they're actually awesome and they put losses on all the other teams that could win the league, they will be in the SEC title game. And then it's a one-game tournament, right?
And they get like Missouri or whoever didn't actually play anybody.
I mean, that would be incredible, right? You put losses on Texas, you put losses on Georgia. Right.
Yep.
And then you get to face Missouri, who has the worst schedule in the SEC, the easiest schedule. And then you beat them by 6 touchdowns in the SEC title game. So I love the Florida answer. If you want to get really crazy, Auburn.
Yeah, I like that one too. I'm shocked they weren't higher.
The key odds. Before everyone responds in the comments, dark horse to win each P4 conference. All right. So that means you can't pick among the top 6 favored, right? I would say Auburn. Here's why. Auburn might have the best receiver core in college football. And what if Jackson Arnold is actually good and he and the Oklahoma offense, as Brett Venables called it during the season, really was an abomination schematically. There's a reason they fired Seth Luttrell midseason. And there's a reason Joel Klatt is like going on a show on film showing like, this is a dumb play. It doesn't work. Like, why would you call, like, he's showing you schematically, like, this doesn't work. Like, it's not even correctly drawn. Like, they're not even correctly running it, right? What if Jackson Arnold's good? Crazier things have happened, man.
Can you give us the odds for the other Power Four conferences, just one at a time, and I'll try to go through it?
Absolutely. Next, we're going to do the Big Ten. So guess who's favored, Ian?
Ohio State,
Penn State, Oregon, Michigan. There's a big drop-off after Michigan, as the Big Ten is. Big Ten is sort of like some elite schools and then kind of some mid schools.
Man, you love that word now.
I do. You've infected me. USC is number 5, but they're at plus 2,400. So I'll say that you can answer USC and below.
Okay.
I'll start off. Illinois.
Okay, Illinois, sure.
Yeah. Here's why. again, dark horses, but here's why. They have won before in that league in a pretty substantial way. Brett Bielema has had good teams with Illinois. Illinois is at the top of developmental cycle. You guys know I like to preach about developmental cycles and how crucial they are. They are at the top of one right now. They've got a quarterback who's actually good and very experienced in Luke Altmyer. They've got an offensive line that can mash. You know, when any Brett Bielema team is going to have some physical O-lines that can run the ball. And they've got a defense. They've got some guys on defense that can actually play. And guess what? Illinois won 10 games last year. I don't think people realize that. And when they played South Carolina in the bowl, and I know South Carolina had a couple of guys sit out, their athletes could hang with South Carolina's. And I have a high respect for South Carolina's athletes last year. Illinois won that bowl game. And we can debate bowl game value. The value of it is I saw Illinois' athletes running around next to South Carolina's, and it didn't look all that different. So that's my argument for Illinois being a crazy dark horse winner of the Big Ten.
I think USC could win the national championship next year.
This year?
This coming season.
Okay.
That's my dark horse. It's probably not going to happen.
Really?
They quietly fixed a lot of stuff last year on their defense.
They have a defensive coordinator now.
And they did not have the horses up front.
Nope.
And they've added a bunch of guys, both in the portal and in recruiting. I'm not for sure if they'll take a huge leap or not, but if they do, their defense could actually be legitimately great. And then their offense, I think they kind of zeroed in on some guys as well. At receiver, Lemon, and then the outside guy, I just wrote them up like a week or two ago. They had one outside guy in particular, and they both dominated A&M in the bowl game, and they both look exceptional. I think Riley – I don't think Riley has really lost a step. I think it's just been a personnel issue.
Oh, you're thinking about Jacoby Lane maybe?
Jacoby Lane, that's it.
Yeah, Makai Lemon and Jacoby Lane. Yeah, it's funny. People are fixating on Zachariah Branch leaving them. He's kind of the ultimate, like – looks awesome, doesn't really translate to football guy.
Like all those guys Texas had for years.
Yes.
Yeah. Monroe.
As Texas fans, we're quite familiar with this archetype.
Yes.
Yeah, that's not a bad answer, man. That is not a bad answer for the dark horse in the Big Ten. All right. ACC, Ian and I staked out early strong claims on Clemson Island back in like January. And now everyone's trying to get on our island, and we're kind of upset because we like to be cool and different.
We're like the old stodgy Austin people that refused to allow the infrastructure to expand.
You're talking to one of them. All right.
Now there's like it's just a constant traffic jam on Clemson Island.
Well, that the whole reasoning as a kid growing up in Austin was if we don't expand I-35, then we can't grow. It'll keep people from growing. And it actually didn't work out, it turns out. All right, let's talk about ACC. We're throwing out Clemson. We're throwing out Miami. We got to throw out – okay, you know what? I'm going to be nice because Clemson is such an overwhelming favorite. Miami's the overwhelming second possibility. I'll offer anyone below there you can pick to include SMU – Louisville, Georgia Tech, Florida State. Fair?
Yeah.
Who you got?
Man, I don't even know. I've looked into a couple of these teams and not been that impressed by the ones I did look at. Maybe I know very little about this team, but maybe Duke. Who did they get at quarterback? Didn't they grab a transfer?
Yeah, Miller Boss from USC.
Right.
Who I actually like, and I think Lincoln Riley kind of framed him, kind of made him the reason we're going 7-5. And I don't think Miller Moss was even close to the problem on their offense. So,
you think he threw him under the bus for that?
He threw him under the bus, and I think Miller Moss is a better player than Jaden Maiva. So, I consider Jeff Brohm one of the best 15 or 20 coaches in college football.
Yeah,
and I think you're going to see him elevate. I'll also tell you. Louisville, secretly one of the best skill rooms of like running backs and receivers in college football. And one of the reasons I know that is because Texas had some interest in one of their players. That made me watch some Louisville film, and he was not the only freak running around out there.
Yeah, they got some dudes.
They got some dudes. I don't think they have infrastructure the way other ACC teams do. So they're going to have to like outscore people and outflash them with big plays. Louisville would be my dark horse. And if I couldn't pick Louisville, I'd take Duke.
I think SMU is the classic sort of team that I would want to short.
Yeah.
Because they return their quarterback. And so everybody's like, returning quarterback.
Yes.
But all their skill guys are gone. And I don't know about the guys coming out. It's like they need Jordan Hudson to not to actually be a five-star for once in his career.
Yeah. I think SMU has a tremendous floor because of where they play and because they go get a bunch of Texas athletes in Dallas, right? I mean, SMU, if you're a three-star, that's a pretty good value proposition if you want to stay in the state of Texas. Like, not a bad deal. And they go out and they're pretty good in the NIL portal. I just don't think they have the upside to win a conference. If you're picking a dark horse, to me, you're trying to project like who you're not trying to project like they could be pretty good. What you're trying to project is who could absolutely blow you away and surprise you. So for Duke, it might be Darian Mensah, this quarterback that they brought in from Tulane. And then Manny Diaz, every place but Texas, does a great job on defense.
Yep.
And I think the thing in Texas, it wasn't Manny Diaz. Maybe there's other stuff going on. So I think Duke is not a bad answer, but I would probably go Louisville just because of the upside of their skill.
I like your pick better than mine.
Okay. Let's round it out with our old stomping grounds, Ian. And when I say stomping grounds, I mean we stomped them on the way out. The Big 12.
We're otherwise stomped.
So every team in the Big 12 is a dark horse based on the odds.
Yep.
I mean, the best odds you can get are plus 600 on Kansas State. Plus 600, for an example, in the Big 10 is like that's between the odds for Oregon and Michigan to win it. So basically, it's open season. If you want to throw out a dark horse, I think any team could be an answer. But if you want to avoid the favorites, I don't think it's crazy to think Baylor could win the Big 12. I mean,
that's what I was about to say.
Oh, go ahead, explain.
They have another skill room with a player that we may have studied a little bit, and the potentiality of a portal poaching.
Yep.
And Sawyer Robertson and Jake Spavital, who I don't think was really the problem at Texas A&M.
No.
So, yeah, Robertson, I can't remember that receiver's name. I bet you know.
I forgot. Once I realized he wasn't coming, I he went out of my mind.
Yeah, well, he's pretty good. Spav's pretty good. Aranda had kind of righted the ship somewhat.
Josh Cameron,
that's right.
Yeah.
I think Baylor would be a good dark horse pick. Maybe Iowa State, if everybody is assuming that they go back into their slumber for another 2 years or so.
Yep.
Because I would have been super down on them, but I saw that they actually added an FCS transfer receiver that was pretty good. It like been very productive. And they were so beat up and broken down on defense by the end of the year last year. Like me and you were watching live texting, like, what are they doing? How are they letting Scadaboo do this to them? I think maybe Iowa State is not going to fold like maybe you would have anticipated, and like especially in December.
You know who's not a dark horse to win the Big 12? Colorado.
Is in their picked high, or you think they have no chance?
They have no chance. They're gonna stink. They're gonna go like 3-6 in Big 12 play.
Interesting.
Yeah,
they're not sure. Good.
Yeah. You know who's fourth in the Big 12 odds? Arizona State.
That's crazy. I feel like they should be the favorites.
I mean, I guess they're attributing everything to Scadaboo.
That's dumb.
And by the way, I love Scadaboo. But, dude, Sam Levitt, That guy can play. They bring back a bunch of guys. And for my money, he needs to show it over time. But Dillingham blew me away. I did not see a better game plan against Texas than what Arizona State did from any team that we played.
Their secondary was very good, and they return all but one of the really good players.
Yeah, they're bringing back everyone but Xavier Alford, who was their best secondary guy.
Alford's back.
No, he's gone.
He's back. It's Simmons who's gone, the nickel.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, man, I love that nickel.
He was great, yeah.
Oh, wow, interesting. All right, well, that even got more interesting. So, yeah, they're picked fourth in the Big 12. The favorite is the team I think is least likely, like Kansas State. I don't think they have the upside to do it. I mean, I think even Utah and Texas Tech have more tangible upside because Utah's got that quarterback from New Mexico, Dampier, who's very dynamic. And then Texas Tech went and bought a football team. Like, yeah. Tell you what, their defensive line is going to look like no defensive line that you've ever seen at Texas Tech this year.
Yeah.
So let's see if they can actually coach and do something with it. All right. Those are our dark horses to win the P4. We hope it was satisfactory. Probably don't bet on any of them because they're called dark horses for a reason. But yeah, if you want to throw a buck on Florida plus 2,100, at least you'll get the intellectual satisfaction of cashing that at the end of the season.
So if you bet a dollar on Florida State, you make $2,100?
Florida.
What did I say?
Florida State.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, don't bet on Florida State. Yeah. No, you don't win $2,100. $21.
All right, $100 will get you $2,100.
Yes.
Yes, I'm a very experienced bettor over here.
I can see the sophistication. Uh-oh, got our final question. Our audience is very obsessed with me fighting Ian in a fist fight. We've debated about what a fist fight means. I think it means a street fight.
I think if it were a street fight, it would say a street fight.
But he's speaking broadly and colloquially.
Have you seen The Searchers?
Oh, yes, I have.
You know the kind of awkward scene where this guy breaks up a wedding and there's like a fist fight, not a street fight.
Right.
A fist fight. And like the reverend and the like ranger keeps intervening to be like, hey, no kicking.
Oh yeah, that's right.
Come on, guys, come on. And then they like get back to it. That is the difference between a fist fight and a street fight. We are going to fight searcher style. That's the idea.
You know, I remember distinctly being bused in eighth grade to a different part of Austin where it had a different demography from what I'd gone to school with prior. And when guys would get in fights, if it went to the ground, they would pick both guys back up and say, come on, y'all, like fight right. Just fists. Like, it was considered cheating if you tackled someone and like grounded and pounded them. Very interesting.
So let's assume those rules.
All right. So let's go through these very quickly. Paul has his dominant hand tied behind his back.
I kind of like that if you're not allowed to tackle me.
Here's the problem.
Yeah.
I did box, and probably my best thing is my jab.
Okay. I don't think that's going to be sufficient then.
So I've got a shot. I've got a real shot.
My boxing training is I fought one of my best friends in college with headgear and gloves one time. And I landed like a big lead, and I was like, I got this. And then he started throwing basic jab combinations at me.
Straight punches.
And landed a bunch of punches. The last one of which put me on my butt with a black eye.
Oh, nice.
I was like, you win.
All right. Next one. Paul consumes 6 E. coli contaminated Chipotle burritos. I would love to eat 6 Chipotle burritos. And a 12-pack of IPAs before the fight. Ian is going to destroy me.
I love this one.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just – not only does he beat me up, I soil myself in the process, which is extra humiliating.
I think in this one, I just keep my distance. I think my cardio is just about at the point now.
Dude, like, I'm going to be on the ground, like I'm holding my stomach.
I'm going to make you chase me for – if I can do it for about a minute, I think I guarantee vomiting.
Dude, I'm going to be on the ground just throwing up and soiling myself. It's going to be disgusting. And all you have to do is like soccer kick me in the head. All right. Paul's made to wear the gimp outfit from Pulp Fiction and chained to a pole. First of all, you said made to wear. That suggests that I wouldn't just wear it anyway. You think that being chained to a pole is an advantage for you? It's a disadvantage. I'm going to use that chain on you, for one thing. You did offer, what if the gimp outfit doesn't have eye holes and I have to use like Jedi abilities? If I can't take you to the ground, then you're going to beat me.
If we could actually do this and had all of our viewers vote on which one of these we did, do you think our viewers would pick the gimp outfit one or the E. coli one?
The gimp outfit. Yeah. See, I feel like the gimp outfit is an advantage for me.
Oh, yes. Eye holes. I want nothing to do with
it. It has eye holes. It offers protection. I've got spikes on me.
Yeah, I miss with a jab, and I end up just punching spikes.
Plus, I'm wearing leather, so it's going to just make me feel like tough and ready.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, this actually is of me. That's not even from Pulp Fiction. All right, back to the scenario. Paul has to wear 20-pound weighted gloves, and Ian gets brass knuckles. Well, if I can't take him down to the ground, 20-pound weighted gloves. How? Obviously, if I have weights, if I can land a shot, you're done. But am I going to be able to throw it at any velocity that Ian can't dodge it in like slow motion?
See, this is the tough one. This one is the cardio one.
Yeah.
If I can make this fight last long enough.
It's going to be hard to hold my hands up.
Yeah, you're going to wear down. But I don't know if I can do it long enough and avoid a shot that puts me in a... Maybe for anybody that doesn't already know, Paul is like 6'2", 230.
Yeah.
Right? I am 5'8", 160. And Paul has done boxing. And I explained earlier my combat experience.
As part of the fist fight, can I headbutt him?
You could probably get one in before the person intervenes and says, oh, no, none of that.
Producer, it happens in boxing, says Homer. Yeah. I'm going to headbutt you. I'm going to wrap you up and headbutt you because I'm also a dirty fighter.
Well, I'm staying away if I can.
That's no, but I mean, I'm going to – that would be my goal is early in this fight, I'm going to wrap up with you, and then I'm going to headbutt you. And that's my best chance, I think.
So I don't like this weighted glove brass knuckle combo.
Brass knuckles are legit. I'll tell you that.
Yeah, but I have to get – landing a shot is not as easy as people think.
That is actually very true. As someone who has sparred with professional fighters, it's shockingly hard to hit a professional boxer if you're not one, or at least in any meaningful way.
This last one I feel is also an advantage.
All right, last one is Ian is backed by a fearsome cadre of six vicious third graders.
I have a vicious third grader, and
you
I can tell you now it's not an advantage for me.
So in this rubric, I can't pick up a third grader and swing him.
Why not? I think you could.
Oh, because that's not part of a fist fight, Ian. Oh, it's allowed. Ooh, Homer allowed. You're done.
Yeah, I think
I'm picking up a screaming third grader, and I'm not paying attention to the other five. They're a distraction. Going after you, and once I take out the leader, in any group fight, Ian, you beat up the guy who most wants to fight, and then all the other guys kind of melt away.
Like Unforgiven.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
All those other guys are just looking to like kick you or, you know, get in a cheap shot. You want to take out the guy that actually wants to fight. And then all those other guys just kind of, it's cool, bro. Yeah.
I think you take that first kid that comes at you, quickly knock him unconscious, snap his arm off, and now you have a weapon.
I would snap off his leg. A femur is actually more formidable than an arm. Arms are bendy.
It's just a tougher break, that's all.
That's true. Final form, one arm tied behind back, free hand with 20-pound glove, after eating Chipotle, wearing a gimp outfit, facing third graders. Ian will dominate me. I will lose badly. I accept that. And also, the combination of the E. coli burrito in the GIMP outfit, that's not a good combo. That's not an outfit you want to clean later. I can tell you that.
What if it's just eating a big Chipotle meal and not six E. coli? What it's like, you've just filled up.
I would just puke and rally. Like, that's not even an issue.
I still like my chances with this because I just feel like I'm sending the kids one at a time. I'm wearing you down.
They're not going to wear me down. You know what a third grader is. A third grader weighs like 60 pounds.
Yeah, but I'm doing it one. You're expending energy every time.
No, that's not even an expenditure of energy. It's like fighting a hobbit. It's nothing.
Well, you also have only one arm. And you have 20-pound gloves.
Oh.
You're in leather, and you just ate a heavy meal.
Yeah, but I feel like hitting a third grader with a 20-pound glove, the other third graders are going to be scared when they see the first couple.
I'm sending them in anyway, and you got to chase them down.
Ian's just a harsh taskmaster.
And then I come in last with the brass knuckles.
Yeah, that would be a problem. That wouldn't be good. Yeah, that's a problem. Oh, they bite, says Homer. They are vicious third graders. Yeah. I gotta say Ian takes that as well. These are good scenarios, folks. I don't know why you guys are so fixated on this, but we appreciate the questions nonetheless. And four, Ian Boyd, this is Paul Wadlington saying, don't eat any E. coli laced burritos. Don't wear any GIMP outfits. Don't fight your friends. But do subscribe to Inside Texas and do like and subscribe to this channel. Thanks, y'all. Hook 'em.